Welcome to Gnostic Insights. My name is Dr. Sid Ropp, and I'm your host. This week's episode is part two of my interview with Adrian Smith concerning his book, A Prison for the Mind, Reflections of a Disappointed Fundamentalist. If you haven't heard part one of this interview, I recommend that you back up one episode and listen to that first, and then you'll come in where we were when we left off. So back to the interview.
It is so hard for me to grasp how it is that people want to put their faith in globalist elites. I just don't get that. I don't understand how they think the technocrats are the saviors of the world.
Well, that takes me to another common characteristic of all extremist ideologies, demonization of the opposition. So what has been taking place is a demonization of ordinary people. They used to be represented by the left as the working class. Now they're not, because basically the globalists have exported all the jobs, hollowing out the middle of the country, enriching these very aristocratic elites on both coasts. Who are systematically attacking these ordinary common sense people, the kind of people in The Wizard of Oz, you know, who were actually representing Dorothy's neighbors, friends neighbors, ordinary
the
people.
The farm people.
Who were there for her, who were there to support her, who were decent individuals, ethical individuals. These are the people that they're going after. Because in their hearts, they do not believe in democracy.
Yeah.
They're saying, you people are stupid, you people are bigots, you are ignorant, you are lost in the past, and the way forward is for us, because we are so rich, we are stand here now, the masters of the universe, ready to liberate you from all that. So why people put their lives in the hands of these people is, again, going back to the indoctrination and the false narratives.
Just because they're feeling inadequate and of course, frightened nowadays. This whole pandemic situation has been, it seems to me, like a giant tool to hammer people down and to keep them separated, to mask us up so that we are indistinguishable and just drones.
Well,
and also, by the way, don't go to church. Don't meet in any groups. Don't go see your family. Don't be with grandma while she's dying. Don't go to the funeral. This is destroying our society.
Dehumanizing people, yes, and separating them. There was one high-ranking politician in Australia preaching to the Australian people, if you go to the grocery store and you see your friend walking down the aisle, don't be friendly. Don't speak to them. And I couldn't believe my ears, but these were her exact words. But you can see how this is all aimed at a kind of dehumanization process of separating people. And don't go to the pub, you know, because that's where people sit around and talk about things and exchange ideas again. Different ideas, maybe, you know, we can't have that.
Exactly. A face-to-face human interaction. That's what must be stopped at this point in time.
And it is the small businesses that are being wiped out. Where you have that face-to-face eye contact with the person that you're transacting with, and you can have a conversation with them. The multinational corporations are doing just fine out of all this. In fact, the billionaire class has substantially increased its wealth through this crisis. And even over the past 12 years, it has. But this process is intensifying, and the concentration of ownership is intensifying. All these things play into that narrative. The head of the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, wrote a book called COVID-19 and the Great Reset, where he more or less spells it out. COVID-19 is the perfect opportunity for the Great Reset, crash the world economy, and then by rebuilding it, we will build back better. And that's another slogan you will hear politicians repeat continuously. Build back better means build back towards this world government of technocratic elites.
Yeah, and I certainly have observed that the people who are the most frightened are the ones that are grasping most strongly for the masks and for the social distancing. Yes. They're happy to be distanced. They're happy to be masked.
Yes.
And it's all driven by fear, by terrible fear. It's so sad. Yes. It's so sad. And I find myself unable. I can't break through to anybody who's in this state of mind. Nobody wants to listen to me about it when I try talking to people that I thought were my friends or thought were my neighbors. You know, they cross the street in order to avoid me.
Well, it goes back to the demonization that creates the fear.
Yeah.
It goes back to, say, the Puritans, where they would point at someone and say, "Witch."
Yes.
Oh, my God, yes. That would strike fear into you. And so nowadays we have these similar characteristics of you're a racist or you're a white supremacist or you're a Nazi with no evidence provided. No, we don't need evidence. No evidence needed. You're a Nazi, a white supremacist. The smear, the big smear, the ad hominem attack, which is designed to avoid debate. And that's what has people scared to death. And because the whole thing has been institutionalized, you can be canceled by these people, and there are consequences for you because you will get fired by some.
Right, or we will have our podcasts taken down, or we will have our blogs shadow banned.
Exactly.
Adrian, it sounds like you're pretty far along in your Gnostic progression out of fundamentalism. I was wondering, how do you stay on the Gnostic path? How are you maintaining this course?
One of the ways that I found to stay on course is to not get locked in battles with the opposition, not to get drawn into the vortex, the divide and conquer strategy of the ruling elites, where they are inspiring us to hate one another and driving us into camps. They themselves are not in either camp. They themselves are above all that, but they are pulling our strings and getting us into a combative frame of mind. And this brings me to something that you wrote in your book, The Gnostic Gospel Illuminated, page 39, where you describe three types of human: spiritual, psychical, and material. The psychical ones, they're the mental ones. And I think fundamentalism is a very mental process. But what you say here is the psychical ones, their better nature has been derailed by continual battles with the imitation, and sometimes passions prompt the psychical ones to rage. And that really grabbed me because it made me think of my own pattern following the church. Being excommunicated from the church was accompanied by rage, and I found myself in a succession of similar experiences. And recently I came across something from the work of Friedrich Nietzsche, The Three Metamorphoses in Thus Spoke Zarathustra, which he describes the camel, the lion, and the child as stages in our development. And I'm going to relate the lion phase to your quotation on the psychical ones in a minute.
Okay.
But he starts out with the camel, and that's, to me, it's like when I was in the church. When you're a camel, you're a load-bearing animal. You kneel down and you let other people pile burdens on you. Burdens grievous to be borne, in Pharisaical terms. Thou shalt. And the fundamentalists love to pile on the rules and the regulations, even when they don't make any sense, and even when they're devoid of any spiritual or moral content.
And so, once again, we're not talking about religious rules necessarily. We're talking about all of these rule givers, right?
Yes, exactly. All any right. kind of rule right. giver. Yeah.
All right.
So a camel bears the burden. It takes the burden of other people's opinions, other people's concepts, then it reaches a phase where it no longer wants to bear the burden of ideas and knowledge that are not its own. And then it becomes the lion. So the lion gets mad. And the lion does battle with a dragon. And this is what Nietzsche is describing it as. The lion does battle with the dragon. The dragon has thousands of shiny little scales, and each one has written on it, "Thou shalt." So the lion is roaring back with what Nietzsche calls the sacred no. But here's where it can be derailed if you get stuck in that phase.
Yeah.
And you're constantly doing, and you call it continual battles.
Yes, the never-ending war.
The never-ending war. So you can get into a place where you start to define yourself in terms of the war.
Right.
And in terms of the battle, I'm the one who fights this and that.
Right.
And then the question becomes, what would you do if there was peace? You would feel completely lost. You wouldn't know where you were because you've gotten lost in this conflict. So that's why Nietzsche goes on to describe the child, the return to innocence. The child wills his own will. Pure individual, the self-actualized person, unburdened by rules and infinitely creative. And he calls that the sacred yes. So we say yes to life, yes to our true inner nature. And again, you know, the internal journey, the mystical experience, the shamanic experience. In a strange sense, the child is father of the man. The poet said that somewhere.
Well, Jesus called us to be innocent as children, right?
Exactly. Well, yes. Again, you know, suffer the little children of such as the kingdom of heaven.
Right.
And also to the pure, all things are pure. But to those who are defiled is nothing pure, which reminded me of my own father who hated his father. His father was an alcoholic, an abusive alcoholic. And he never forgave his father, wouldn't go to the funeral. And I could see growing up, even as a child, how this was really poisoning his outlook. Because interestingly, my own memory of my grandfather as a four-year-old, which was my last memory of him, was of a very jolly, jovial individual with a pipe who would laugh a lot and make me laugh a lot. And I don't have any bad memories about him. So it kind of reminded me to the pure, all things are pure.
Yes.
Or to, you know, in a sense, there was a wonderful human being there who had his own traumas that made him behave the way he did. Place of a child of total forgiveness and understanding. And also what you're seeing a lot today is projection.
Oh, yes.
People are not looking within to say the shadow within. They're denying their shadow and they're pointing to other people. You're the racist. You're the bigot. You know, it's always pointing an accusing finger at someone else. And within the confines of an ideology, people will have this puffed up sense, you know, this inflated sense that they are part of an elite group of people who have it right.
Yeah.
And that if you are within this group, you have it right. But those outside that group are in outer darkness.
Now, so how are we Gnostics different than that? Are we not also part of a group that thinks we have it right?
Oh, that's a really good one. I think that is something that I've heard said, that Gnostics themselves were elitist in a similar way. But I think what they were was they were not proselytizers. And they would also have a very tolerant attitude towards their fundamentalist orthodox counterparts. They would just say, well, these people understand it in an outer sense, but we understand it in an inner sense. So they were very tolerant of it. And they were not inclined to say, well, you're completely rotten. You need to be converted. No, they would keep it to themselves. So they would sort of keep it to themselves. That could be mistaken for elitism. I think it's mistaken for elitism, not true elitism. The favor which they extended to their orthodox counterparts was not returned.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean. They were
right.
They were quite understanding. They would say people have the outer form of religion to varying degrees, and whatever works for you. I would never say to a fundamentalist Christian member of a church, give up your fundamentalism. I would never do that. And I hope if there's any misunderstanding in that respect, to clear it up right now. I have no idea what works for you. And if it works, fine. I'm all
right.
For it.
Plus, you know, there's plenty of good, loving people who actually love the Father in churches.
Of course.
So they're not part of this church hierarchy. You know, they're not the ones who ran the witch trials and the Inquisition.
No.
They love God and they love to pray. And that's where they are in their church life.
Yes. And some people might have a literalistic interpretation of the Bible. They might believe every word is the word of God. But I can tell you one thing, in believing that, they'll be selective.
Sure.
But my point is that you could have that person be the most wonderful human being on earth, you know, kind, loving, caring, inspiring. So I make no judgments about it, except when it comes to the empty vessels, and in particular, those who stand outside of it all and above it all. Because what I've discovered in my exploration of fundamentalism is that there are some very high-level operatives that are orchestrating these belief systems and using these belief systems. And I don't think for a minute that this woke thing is coming from the grassroots up.
Mm-mm.
This woke thing is coming from the very top down, in my opinion, and not everyone shares that view.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my opinion that it is being orchestrated from above, not below.
It sure feels like that to me, too.
Yeah.
Because, you know, before it all started up so big, I thought we were pretty well integrated. I mean, I know a lot of interracial couples. I was a college teacher. I didn't see it happening. And then all of a sudden, we're all told that we're horrible racists.
Exactly. And I'll just give one example so that I'm not misunderstood about the woke thing.
All right.
They talk about equity, diversity, inclusion, sustainable development. All these things are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-racism is wonderful. I'm not making that argument.
Mm-hmm.
When you scratch below the surface, what do you get? And I'll refer to something that happened with some academics. Her name is Helen Pluckrose. There were two other professors, James Lindsay and Peter Boghossian. They're all professors. And they decided they would create some fake academic papers to see if they could get them published.
Mm-hmm.
And they were complete an utter gibberish. But because they are academics, they know how to speak the woke language. So this was in fields, and I want to emphasize this, it was in particular fields, not all fields of academia, but gender studies, queer studies, and fat studies. So they aimed their papers in those three areas. They wrote 20 papers. The majority of them were published, and many of them were praised. But they were complete and utter nonsense and actually quite ridiculous. One of them was, they called them the Dog Park Papers, and it was entitled Human Reaction to Rape Culture and Queer Performity at Urban Dog Parks in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Complete and utter joke.
Okay. Yeah, that's funny.
And they asked the question, do dogs suffer oppression based upon perceived gender? The paper asks. and then it goes on. Another article got published that, you know, should punish white students because of their privilege, exhorting professors to enact forms of experiential reparations. The paper suggesting telling privileged students to stay silent or even binding them to the floor in chains. So they're making a joke, but actually they're speaking the truth. Oh, and then there were, if students protest to the educators that they're mistreating the white people, take considerable care not to validate privilege, sympathize with, or reinforce it, and in so doing, recenter the needs of privileged groups at the expense of marginalized ones.
Yeah.
So I'm just reading this to say, this is what I mean by woke. Okay, that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
Not real anti-racism or tolerance towards transsexuals, etc. This is what I'm talking about right here.
Right.
Nonsense.
Well, and And when you hear academics speaking, they are mouthing that those exact things, even those what were written as parodies, yet people are taking them for real.
Yes. So what this indicates, the degree to which these fake studies gained acceptance in these particular areas, tells us just how far the rot has gone.
Yeah.
Because it is not, someone would say, well, you're just talking about some fiddly little point here. No, I'm talking about a systemic problem, that these ideas are dominating our institutions. It's the grassroots people that can't stand it. Those yeah. ordinary people, you know, that we're talking about, that can't stand it.
Right.
The stuff is coming from the top down through our institutions. You have to go through some course now to get into law school by some brainwashing organization. It might be Common Purpose or, you know, Training the Leaders of Tomorrow, you know, and it'll be yeah. all this critical race theory. And now we have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff wanting yeah. to teach all the soldiers critical race theory. This is coming from the top.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And the people that don't want to go along with this, well, they're just getting drummed out, because who needs them anymore, right?
Right.
Well, what is the hope? Is there hope for us? Are we going to go down? Are we going down with the woke ship?
Well, as for the civilization, that will depend. That's up to us. Yeah. It's really up to us. Are we going to buy it? I mean, there's no power on earth that's going to stand in the way of an enlightened or an awakened population.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in history and the history of all fundamentalism, is that it ignores the evidence yeah. of its own failures. And things can go really, really, really bad, but they will always find a way to make it not their fault. And also, these people at the top are completely insulated from the consequences of their own teachings.
Rules for thee and not for me.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, the pharisaical approach. So the way forward for everybody is the inner journey. The inner journey will liberate you from authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. It will sensitize you to when you're being played and when you're being conned. And I think what keeps people believing it or not wanting to look at it or afraid to look at it is mm-hmm. fear. It is mm-hmm. fear. It's also very hard to believe that people so apparently pious could be so wicked.
Oh, right.
It's hard for people to grasp that without some philosophical understanding of Gnosticism, which tells you that we do live in a flawed reality. That we do live in a world that is deeply wrong mm-hmm. at its core. So it's like the Matrix, and it's like waking up out of the Matrix to this rather disturbing truth that there is no utopia to be found here.
Right.
That this world is not our home.
Right.
My kingdom is not of this world, as Jesus right. said, you know. Unless you have that philosophical, spiritual basis. And also, going back to the mystical experience, when you know the final truth or the ultimate truth, then you are able to stand or to bear the awful truth of what we're confronted with now. So the answer has got to be ever-increasing numbers of people undertaking the inner journey, some kind of spiritual basis in your life. Some kind of spiritual basis.
Okay, so obviously with the Gnostic podcasts, not only my own, but everybody else, and the wonderful Gnostic books such as yours, you know, I can just hear someone saying, well, you're being a hypocrite because are you not proselytizing enlightenment? But yet it doesn't seem as though we are, because we're just talking about a process of coming to your own realization. Not there, listen to me and believe what I say and be a little right. robot.
They're always right? going to say that. They're always going to say that. They're always going to turn it around on you like that.
Yeah.
It's not proselytizing. It's encouraging people to not be subject to proselytizing. Okay. Right. And there's a big right. difference there.
Good.
It's encouraging yeah. people to get their own. Don't listen to me.
Yeah.
Don't listen to what I'm trying to tell you. listen to yourself. That's all I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, you know, I have a very kind of a fiery personality, and I think I tend to be like the lion, and I've just got this warrior spirit.
I know.
But my brother Bill is a much kinder, gentler person, and he is not a warrior whatsoever. And he is just always reminding me, just be loving. They just don't understand. Just embrace and love and teach. That is my job. It's not to try to scream at them and make them wake up. It doesn't seem to work.
Yes, I know. And I the reason I picked up so instantly on that little passage in your book was because I have a tendency that way too.
Yeah.
And that's why I took careful note of it. But yes, indeed. I mean, your life is your teaching, isn't it? I mean, if you're kind, if you're generous to your opposition, you're a good person, that's going to speak volumes by itself. And without
That's the fruit, isn't it? That's the fruit
of
our spirit.
Exactly.
Well, I am continually reminded, I plug into the Pleroma all the time. And there are certain little practices that help me step back from the world and look up, such as I like to pay attention to those repeated numbers on the clock, like 111,
1010,
222, 333, 444, 555. Whenever I look at a clock, it's one of those times.
Wow, yeah. Isn't that amazing?
And then it makes me look up to the Pleroma, and then I cross myself, I genuflect, and I praise God, and then I carry on.
When I was having this episode at Crater Lake, that whole period of time was associated with really amazing synchronicities, and many of them were numerical.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it was 323 and 555 continuously, and in amazing ways, you know, like, I'll just give a very quick one, take too much time on it. At around the same time, I was looking after my mother in Ontario, flew up to Toronto, went to the hotel room. I noticed on the door 323, and I thought, that's interesting, because our condo in Vancouver that we recently sold had the number 323. Mm-hmm. So I took my mother to the specialist, and we went to the specialist, and the door number was 323. And then,
oh, really?
Yes. And then we went out to the parking lot, and then I got in my dad's car, and I noticed the license plate was 323.
Oh, wow. And you're going, ah.
And then I go home to Moncton. I'm talking to a psychologist who's also into the mystical and the Jungian aspects of it. I told her about this experience and asked her what she thought. And she handed me her business card, and she says, take a look at my license number. The Brunswick license number. It was 323.
Oh, wow.
So that kind of synchronicity seems to follow us around.
It is humorous that the eons like numbers.
they're playing with us
with the numbers, sure. It's just wonderful.
Well, I think that I've said everything I wanted to say, but I will read this quote from Nietzsche, which I think ties together this idea of the Pharisees being like a template for further manifestations of the same thing.
Ah, a fractal pattern.
The fractal pattern, yes, exactly, relating to that. Because Nietzsche, in the middle of the 1800s, was confronted with the equivalent of the social justice warrior. And he said this, "You preachers of equality, the tyromania of impotence clamors thus out of you for equality. Your most secret ambitions to be tyrants thus shroud themselves in words of virtue. Mm. And when they call themselves the good and the just, do not forget that they would be Pharisees if only they had power." So I'll leave it at that.
Wow. That's just great. Yeah. And isn't this interesting? We've had this long-ranging Gnostic discussion, barely even touching on the demiurge or the archons or the eons, but making sense nonetheless.
Yes, it would take more hours, wouldn't it?
Right. Well, that's what,
cover it.
This will be our 41st episode on my podcast. And all of that I'm considering to be like a masterclass in basic Gnostic concepts. And so if anyone wants to learn more about what Gnosticism is, I encourage them to go back to the first 8 episodes of the Gnostic Insights and get up to speed.
Yes, and I've been doing that, and it's been wonderful, and I really enjoy your site.
Well, thank you, Adrian. I see, what I attempt to do is actually explain basic philosophical concepts. I'm not just talking history or talking isms or, you know, any of that. I'm trying to make it understandable. So yes, good. It's working.
It really is.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Adrian Smith. And again, people, I recommend Adrian's book, A Prison for the Mind. It's a very good read. It's very enjoyable and quite understandable.
And thank you very much, Sid. It's been a real pleasure, and I hope we can chat again.
Thanks, Adrian. Onward and upward. I look forward to bumping into you in other places as well, on down the line.
Onward and upward. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.